We were very sad to hear that Elizabeth Newfer, a reporter for the Boston Globe, was killed in a car accident on Friday in Iraq, where she was covering the aftermath of the war. She's the 13th journalist to die in Iraq since the war began. She was returning to Baghdad from Tikrit, where she was researching a story, when the car she was in blew a tire and slammed into a guardrail. Her translator was also killed. The driver survived. We called Washington Post reporter Peter Slevin in Baghdad. He was Newfer's friend and was called to the scene of the accident. What story was she working on?
She was working on a story on the Ba'ath Party, the ruling party in Iraq under Saddam Hussein's era. She had found some remarkable documents at a Ba'ath Party headquarters that detailed how the party itself snooped on Iraqis and intimidated them. She thought it would work particularly well if she went to Tikrit, which is up the road. It's Saddam Hussein's hometown and a Ba'ath Party stronghold, to write about the current nominal mayor of this town, who is a former Ba'ath Party player, Ba'ath Party figure. And she intended to write that and alongside the story on the documents that she'd found. She had hoped before leaving the country in a couple of weeks to do a story on the process of de-Ba'athification, the idea that the old party needed to go, and the difficulties of figuring out who was good and who was bad, and how Iraq would move forward after the legacy of the party.
Had you been traveling with her?
I had not been traveling with her. I ran into Elizabeth when we separately found ourselves in Najaf, the Shiite holy city south of Baghdad. She was working on a story on the Hausa, who are religious figures very important in Shiite culture and perhaps increasingly important in the politics of Baghdad. It was a funny scene because I was waiting to talk to the mayor, the new mayor of Najaf, and I saw a woman in an abaya, a black cloak that women are required to wear in the holy sites. And something didn't quite compute, and someone said, "Peter." And I realized it was Elizabeth. I thought maybe it was a Catholic nun, perhaps, coming to offer some aid. But she was wearing what she needed to wear to do the story.
Well, Peter, we're all very sorry, and I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
I'm glad to talk.
Peter Slevin speaking to us from Baghdad. Those of us at Fresh Air had become great admirers of Elizabeth Newfer. She had been our guest three times in the past few months, talking about her reporting from Iran and Iraq, and her earlier work covering Bosnia and Rwanda, which was the subject of her book, The Key to My Neighbor's House. She had also covered the first Gulf War and the war on terrorism in Afghanistan. Our first interview was recorded last December. She had just completed boot camp for journalists reporting from war zones. She was preparing to go to Iraq. I asked her about the possibility of being exposed to weapons of mass destruction. I wanted to know if she found that prospect terrifying.
I'm always terrified when I go into a war zone. I mean, people sometimes think I'm a glutton for punishment, but I do always find that the stories of the people who will be there, the citizens, and who are in fact unprepared for these kinds of disasters, are always just extraordinarily compelling. They're usually worth the risk.
Now, we were talking about how one of the role-playing things you did during this boot camp for journalists entering war zones is that you were abducted, you know, in a role-playing scenario.
Right.
Have you ever been abducted in real life while covering a war?
I was hijacked, I guess would be the way to put it. I had an incident occur in Bosnia. Imagine it's the height of the war. There's intense shelling. It's dark at night. A colleague and I are up on Mount Igman. We can watch the city being bombed below, and we're attempting to drive out. We're driving a heavily armored car. The road is slippery. It's rainy. It's a dirt track. Our car slips in the mud and basically falls into a ditch. We climb out. It's an exceedingly heavy car, and we can't get it out of the ditch. Unfortunately, the people we flag down are extraordinarily drunk soldiers. And they proceed to sort of take the car battery to you know, sort of try to harass us. They surround my colleague with guns. One of them starts pawing me rather intensely, and it becomes pretty clear at a certain point that you know, rape can be a real option. It was a rather nasty experience and kind of a horrible realization at the time.
How did you get through to the other end on that one?
Well, just sort of one of those moments of insight that in fact what these guys probably were more interested in was the car than they were me. So I spoke a little bit of Bosnian. I kept talking to them again. I kept trying to humanize myself. I kept saying, you know, hi, I'm a journalist. This man is my husband. He wasn't, but he was convenient for the time. And, you know, here's our car. Can you help us fix it? You know, and eventually handed the car keys over. And they got very distracted with the idea of getting this car out of the ditch. And once they took their hands off me, we grabbed the satellite telephone and ran and found our way to a UN soldier and a tank and had literally just set up the satellite telephone and were radioing for help and whatever could happen and watched our car drive by us. Vroom! And saying, whoops, because now it's like 2 a.m. and we have to hitchhike off of Mount Igman in the middle of a terrible shelling raid. But in fact, we were able to hitchhike off of Mount Igman and we did get down to safety. And eventually the car, in fact, was recovered from these particular thugs. So it all ended very happily.
Is there a story that you've told that has had the biggest impact, you know, that you feel really good about?
Well, I'd have to, again, refer back to the key to my neighbor's house. I was really haunted by some of the people I covered in Bosnia and Rwanda, and that's why I chose to take time off and to write the book. So the two stories I feel most strongly about are Hasan Nuhanovic, and I told his story at various points throughout the Bosnian War. Hasan is a survivor of Srebrenica, the UN safe area that was overrun by Bosnian Serb troops. 8,000 Bosnian men and boys were slaughtered. Hasan survived, but he lost his family. And a series of stories I know, answered a lot of questions for him about sort of who had pulled the trigger and why. And that was kind of a pretty neat thing to be able to do. The second story is, again, witness JJ, this remarkable woman I met in Rwanda. After the genocide, I told her story, along with that of other women, of how they were willing to come forward and talk about their rape. Just an extraordinary set of accounts, particularly in conservative Rwanda, where women rarely talk about issues of sex. And wrote that story. And when I returned, I guess 3 or 4 years later, I found that, in fact, Witness JJ, and you notice I'm calling her Witness JJ and not by her name, had gone on to be a lead witness at the UN War Crimes Tribunal. And in fact, it's due to her testimony that rape is now considered to be an act of genocide. That is a historical first for women.
What did she say and what was the importance of it?
You know, she went in front of the tribunal and basically looked the man in the eye who had ordered the rapes. His name was Jean-Paul Akayesu. He was the mayor of her village, of Taba. And she gave extraordinary testimony about how Akayesu, as he was discussing the women, turned to one of the Hutu Interahamwe, the sort of Hutu thugs, and said, "Never ask me again what a Tutsi woman tastes like," a reference to the fact that the women had just been raped, and then added, you know, "because tomorrow they will all be killed." It was that particular set of phrases, just, you know, the courtroom was just dead silent at the sort of gall that this man had to sort of talk about these women's rape and then basically order them to be killed the next day.
And where is he now?
Behind bars for life.
A question that's come up is, should journalists have to testify at war crimes tribunals about the information that they have? Is there information you would voluntarily give up to the war crimes tribunal because you didn't think it would hurt hurt victims and that it might help get justice?
Yeah. No, it's obviously my company's decision whether or not they want me to testify or whether or not they want me to turn information over. But there was a time when I led war crimes investigators to a mass grave. They wouldn't have found it otherwise. And I didn't see that it was any dereliction of duty. I happened to be in the neighborhood. I had just stumbled on it. It was clear that it needed to be safeguarded, that it needed to be exhumed, that it was an important piece of evidence. And so I, you know, said, hey, follow me, you know, we'll show you where it is. I didn't feel that that compromised me in any way as a journalist. You know, by the sheer fact of the reporting we did, a lot of the reporting we did in Bosnia, in fact, helped the War Crimes Tribunal. So I think that it's, you know, we end up often chasing the same things.
Elizabeth Newfer recorded last December. Newfer was a reporter for the Boston Globe. She was killed in a car accident Friday in Iraq while covering the aftermath of the war. She was 46. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Julian Hertzfeld. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Roberta Sharrock directs the show. I'm Terry Gross.
Tapes and transcripts of Fresh Air are available at 1-877-213-7374 or on the internet at www.burrells.com. Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, the CIA's covert funding of the Afghan Mujahideen in their war against the Soviet Union. We'll hear from 60 Minutes producer George Kreil, who's written a book about the operation, and from Charlie Wilson, the Texas congressman who worked with a CIA operative to help fund the jihad. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.